This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Last night's presidential debate in Boca Raton, Florida, was the third and final meeting between President Obama and Governor Romney. The forum covered many topics: Syria, Libya, China, and America's broader role in the world. Unlike in earlier encounters, last night the two contenders' approaches sometimes sounded pretty similar. But in other areas, such as Iraq, there were sharp contrasts.
You and I agreed, I believe, that there should have been a status of forces agreement.
That's
did you?
True.
Oh, you didn't want a status of forces agreement?
No, what I would not have done is left 10,000 troops in Iraq that would tie us down. That certainly would not help us in the Middle East.
I'm sorry, look, you actually, there was an effort on the part of the president to have a status of forces agreement. And I concurred in that and said that we should have some number of troops that stayed on. That was something I concurred with.
Governor,
that was your posture. That was my posture as well. You thought it should have been 5,000 troops.
Governor,
I thought it should have been more troops. But you know what? The answer was we got no troops through whatsoever.
This is just a few weeks ago that you indicated that we should still have troops in Iraq.
No, I didn't.
I
indicated that you failed to put in place a status of forces agreement at the end of the conflict that existed.
Governor, here's one thing I've learned as Commander-in-Chief. You've got to be clear, both to our allies and our enemies, about where you stand and what you mean.
Now, with the final debate over, just 2 weeks remain until Election Day, and these forums will reverberate as the campaigns head into the final stretch, influencing how issues are discussed and voters' perceptions of which man is better suited to lead our country. Today in The Exchange, we dissect the debates and what role they've played this year, and let's hear from you. Did you watch or listen to the debates? What did you think? How useful do you believe these events are in terms of giving voters information about the issues and about each candidate's temperament? And if you were undecided going into the debate season, did these debates help you decide? Give us a call, the exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. We have two guests for the hour. With me in studio, Wayne Lesperance, professor of political science at New England College, director of the Center for Civic Engagement there. Wayne, good to see you. Thank you for taking the time.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for having me.
Andy Smith is also with us, director of the UNH Survey Center and an associate professor of political science at UNH. And I know you're a busy guy with all the polling this season, so I really appreciate you taking the time this morning.
Glad to be here.
Well, and Andy, I want to start with you. Last night's debate on foreign policy, do voters this year really care about what a candidate's foreign policy is?
Well, I think that what you heard in that debate was two candidates that held fairly similar positions on most foreign policy issues, and as a consequence, were relegated to bickering back and forth, as we just heard in that clip beforehand, and I don't know if that was particularly illuminating or helpful. And as far as voters, this is an election which is about the economy. The economy has been the most important issue by far in any polling that's been done, and foreign policy, I think, is a far distant thought in the mind of most voters. That doesn't mean it's not important in the role of the president, but for the election, I think that foreign policy was not anywhere near as important, and that this debate probably was not as helpful as the other earlier debates.
Well, and in terms of, again, how voters perceive or care about this issue, Andy, was foreign policy a more important issue 8 years ago and even 4 years ago?
Well, certainly both 8 years ago and 4 years ago. 8 years ago, between John Kerry and George Bush, this was in the midst of the Iraq war, and when the Iraq war wasn't going so well, that was the year that Howard Dean famously made his charge to become the Democratic nominee, failed, but largely on an anti-war effort. John Kerry criticized heavily for his support for the war. And then in 2008, Barack Obama became a viable candidate, somewhat unknown, but became a viable candidate largely because he was the only one of the Democratic candidates not to have voted for the Iraq war in the first place. So the foreign policy was definitely dominating the last two elections, but also it was dominating those elections not just because there were things going on in the world, but the economy was generally okay until right before the 2008 election. And then once that switched around, it's been all economy all the time ever since.
Wayne.
No, I certainly would agree. I think maybe a little less important in the last election, John McCain's candidacy was largely based on his, you know, sort of experience as somebody who could be a commander-in-chief. And the field shifted on him and became one much more focused on economics and jobs and the coming recession. And so I think he, you know, he sort of lost his footing because of the change of emphasis on issues. But last night certainly was not so much about the individual policies, but it was really for Mitt Romney about, did he seem presidential? Did he seem like a commander-in-chief? Is he someone that we believe we could trust who would send our young men and women into harm's way? That sort of thing, and manage, you know, the current challenges in the world. So, I think that the tests were very different for them last night, and I think that for Romney it really was about just can he play this role? And, you know, voters will decide on whether or not that's true enough. Andy's right, though. I think that foreign policy in and of itself is very low on the list of priorities for voters, and I'm not sure how much of a difference last night makes in the grand scheme of things.
Well, and for the whole hour today, I want to look at the entire debate season, but I do want to spend a couple more minutes looking at last night, and then we'll sort of shift gears and look at overall the role these events have played in this year's elections. So picking up on what you said then, Wayne, what was it about the tone and the style that each man was trying to accomplish last night?
I think the president, you know, this is sort of the third of three debates in which he sort of evolved in terms of style. You know, we all know the story on the first debate. The second debate, clearly, he came to push back. And last night, he was fairly aggressive. I think he dominated, in fact, the debate with in terms of tone and with a real strong pushback at times. And I think your clip illustrated that, almost lecturing Governor Romney about, you know, the issues of the world. And so, you know, it's clear the president came out to fight, and he did. And I think he did pretty well. If you were scoring on points, I think he probably took it there. Mitt Romney had to come out and seem presidential, seem like he could be the commander in chief, and seem, you know, fairly adept at talking about these issues. And I thought he did okay. I thought, you know, he was up to the bar there. You know, he wasn't aggressive. He didn't have any, you know, big moments. And when he, you know, there also weren't any, you know, gaffes or mistakes. So I thought it was a fairly even performance for him, and he probably did what he needed to do.
What do you think, Andy?
I largely agree with what Wayne said. For Romney, he had to appear to be able to be commander-in-chief, and I think he did an okay job of that. For Obama, he's still in a position where in a number of the polls he's trailing. The momentum has certainly been with Romney, and he has to do something to fight back to regain some of the momentum. And I think that the sharpness in his tone that we saw last night, and as well in the previous debate, were responses to that. I don't think they were designed to get the undecided voters to make up their mind as much as they were targeted to the Democratic base to get them fired up. So he was out there giving some raw meat to his supporters, whereas I think Romney was kind of looking past that and looking towards a broader feel from the general electorate, who isn't really tuned into this yet, but who might be just starting to focus on the race and will focus on the personality of the candidate and their seeming ability to do the job rather than the back and forth in a debate.
Wayne.
Andy, so let me throw something at you because this is something I've been wondering about. I hope it's okay, Laura. If you're in the third and final debate and it's on foreign policy and you're still trying to appeal, to motivate, to get your base out, I mean, that seems to me to be a tough spot to be in.
It is a tough spot to be in, and I think that's one of the reasons that we've seen such a sharp change in the tone from President Obama from the first debate to the second and third debates. I think in the first debate, he was doing essentially what Romney did last night, and that right. was try to stay above the fray, not to get drawn into to arguments, not to appear to be angry or sharp or pointed or going after his opponent. And I think that now he's in the position that Romney was in before the first debate, and that's why we saw this real change in tone in the last two.
The number for you to join our conversation this morning is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. We're dissecting the debates today on The Exchange, the role that these four events have played, and we want to hear from you. If you watched or listened to some or all of these, what did you think? If you were undecided going into the debates, did they help you make up your mind? Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or send us, as I said, an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Keep them short. Our guests are Wayne Lesperance, professor of political science at New England College, and Andy Smith, director of the UNH Survey Center and associate professor of political science at UNH. One more question, guys, about last night, and then I do want to move into some some of these broader questions about the whole debate season. Wayne, candidates couldn't resist talking about economic policy, even though last night was about foreign policy, saying strength at home means strength abroad.
Right. Well, and they read the polls, too, and they know what Andy's doing over there at the Survey Center, and they see that the jobs and the economy are the number one issues. And so, you know, to the extent you could tie foreign policy back to job creation, jobs and the economy, you have to. And I think that was the key. The other thing that they talked about in terms of here back at home was there were sort of subtle messages that were particularly directed at Ohio and particularly directed at women.
I heard the women ones.
Right. Whenever you talk about China and coal and China and taking jobs away from America, that's real red meat stuff in Ohio. So they clearly know who's going to decide this election at this stage, and it's those folks in Ohio and it's women voters. So there's quite a bit of that. One last observation, which I thought may have been the only mistake the president made last night in an otherwise really good performance, was this sort of throwaway line about horses and bayonets, talking about the Navy and military defense spending. And the first thing that I thought was, you know, the takeaway on that seemed to be sort of a dig at the Navy, you know, sort of that the Navy's antiquated and we're evolving past that. And yet one of the most important states in this election is Virginia, with a huge Navy population, defense industry population. Another big Navy state is Florida, North Carolina, all swing states, all important to the president's reelection efforts. And so I thought, you know, I think if they wish could have that one back, they might want to have that one back.
The Obama people, you mean.
The Obama folks.
Interesting. I think other people, some other analysts, Wayne, had a different reaction.
Sure.
They sort of saw that as Barack Obama saying to Mitt Romney, you know, I know you don't understand foreign policy, and I do, and it was kind of a put down.
And I think there are plenty of folks who will take it that way. But again, this election isn't about the nation in a sense. It's about those individual swing states and those districts where these kinds of issues really matter. And I just remember thinking, you know, that's where I'm from, Virginia. I remember thinking the Navy folks down there and talking to some friends last night had a pretty strong reaction to that.
Interesting.
I think Wayne's got something there because the debate is watched largely by, you know, the political activists or, you know, the political choir, so to speak. But what happens in those debates is those little clips get pulled out and turned into ads, and that's
sure.
What we're likely to see in these other states.
All right. Well, we'll pick up more on what you said on who's watching, Andy, after a short break. And we'll start taking your calls, too. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. We'll be right back.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and more of our recap of the presidential debate on The Exchange on NHPR and at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show. More morning after analysis of the third and final presidential debate. New Hampshire weather today, increasing clouds, highs near 55 in the North Country, ranging to 65 in southern New Hampshire. Tonight, mostly cloudy statewide. Chance of a few showers across southern and southwestern New Hampshire. Lows near 35 across the North Country, 40 to 45 across much of the rest of the state. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from the Altus Investment Group in Concord, one office managing $40 million of retirement nest eggs for baby boomers in central New Hampshire, altusinvest.com. And from Goff Wilson, a global immigration law firm helping businesses and individuals achieve successful immigration solutions, online at goffwilson.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking back at the presidential debates, including last night's foreign policy discussion. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477 or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. If you watched some or all of the debates this season, what did you think? If you were an undecided voter going in, did these events help you decide? And overall, how useful do you believe these debates are in terms of giving voters information about the issues and about each candidate's temperament? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or put your thoughts on NHPR's Exchange page. And Wayne Lesperon, Andy Smith, let's go right to our callers. And Mary's joining us from Tamworth. Hi, Mary. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you. I love your program.
Thank you, Mary. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I just wanted to say I thought Obama won that debate last night, hands down. He was crisp and to the point. He was angry sometimes, yes, quietly angry, but you could just see him thinking, this is the kind of rhetoric that turned the world off to America, that made so much of the the Arab world so angry at us, calling what he did an apology tour when he went to the Middle East and tried to explain that we stand up for principles of human rights and democracy, and we believe in accepting all peoples, no matter what their religion is. That was basically his tour. It was not an apology. It was a diplomacy tour, and it was brilliant diplomacy, and it was probably the reason that those countries have democracies now. Governor Romney was a fearmonger. He kept trying to scare people about Iran, nuclear. He was beating the drum for Israel in a way that I found pandering and offensive. We can talk tough to our friends as well as our enemies when we think our friends are doing something dangerous. And that's what President Obama's had to do sometimes.
You know, Mary, I want to follow up on your point about Iran and lots of areas of the world covered last night. But Wayne and Andy, Iran was a point of contention between these two gentlemen. Andy, it also came up during the vice presidential debate, the idea that is Iran closer to building a nuclear weapon or is it not? What's your take on what the candidates said last night about Iran, Andy? And Wayne, I want to hear from you, too.
Well, first off, Iran's a great whipping boy in American foreign policy. It's been one of our primary enemies for the last, 30, 40 years now, going back to 1979. So it's something that Americans, I think, viscerally react against. So if Iran is doing something that is supposedly dangerous to the United States, that's always a way to get voters worked up. So not surprising that it came up. That's not saying anything about it not potentially being a very dangerous place and a very dangerous country, but it's not surprising to me that it came up.
Wayne.
I find Mary's observations really interesting because, you know, for all intents and purposes, there's really not a whole lot of daylight between Mitt Romney's position and the president's position on Iran.
On a lot of these other foreign policy issues.
I mean, it's one of the remarkable things last night. I mean, some are describing Mitt Romney's march to the center, right, because his positions are very clearly lining up with the president. There are times when he said last night, I agree with the president on this issue. But on Iran, here's what's interesting about it. When pressed, President Obama on the Iran and Israel issue, President Obama said, if Israel's attack, we will stand with Israel. I mean, that's the position that the Republicans have taken, a bellicose position, as some progressives have described it, that the United States is committed to the defense of the state of Israel. So, you know, I don't see a whole lot of difference there. I think where the president tried to carve out some distinctions when he said, you know, we are largely the same on this issue, but I think that Mitt Romney would have been more quickly open to the use of force. And that's a degree of difference, a distinction of difference. I think that was the only major distinction there.
I think what
the president was really trying to do was demonstrate experience over inexperience in foreign policy. And because they both essentially are accepting some fundamental U.S. principles on foreign policy that it's going to be roughly the same regardless of who the president is, it is more of a difference of style that they were trying to demonstrate last night.
Thanks for the call, Mary. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. We want your thoughts overall on this debate season that just wrapped up last night. You can email us at exchange@nhpr.org or call 1-800-892-6477. And Wayne and Andy, I do want to turn now to the fact that we have wrapped up these debates, these four events, which we've all watched closely, and let our listeners know that we're going to dig more into the specifics of foreign policy on Thursday. So to the general debates, and to you first, Andy Smith, okay, real broadly, who's watching these events?
Generally speaking, it's the people who are political activists in the broad sense, people who are interested in politics and interested in the election. So it's people who largely have some ties to the political parties and are watching these debates a little bit like watching a sports event where you want to root for your guy and root against the other guy. You want to see your guy do well and the other guy do poorly and probably get some tidbits that you can use in cocktail parties against some of your friends who support the other candidate. So it's primarily activists. The difference is that as we get closer to the election, that pool of people who are kind of made up their mind or kind of engaged in watching the entire contest gets bigger. So the first debate, I think, is the one that was the most interesting and the most impactful because that's when you had the fewest people that actually were rooting for somebody yet. And in that debate, I think, is the one where you saw the most movement after the debate in the polls, whereas these last two, I don't think you're going to see as much, largely because the supporters have already decided, voters have already decided who they support and are just looking for, talking points.
What do you think, Wayne? The first one matters, the other three that come after not so much?
I think so. I think last cycle there was a bit of an anomaly because of Sarah Palin's involvement, so the vice presidential debate numbers spiked pretty high. But generally speaking, it's that first debate that I think there's the most openness to change because folks maybe haven't made up their mind yet. And there's probably the most viewership, listenership, and all that stuff. I also think that one of the things we don't talk a whole lot about is that folks may not watch the debate, but they watch all the spin after. They watch all the coverage the following day and listen to all the pundits and spin doctors and the witty conversation that happens on the exchange. and that helps to inform their view of who won and why and all of that. And if that's the case, then the mountain that the president had to climb after the first debate was pretty high because Romney, by all accounts, had a very good night.
Well, and that gets to what Andy Smith said earlier, right, Wayne, that, you know, even if people don't watch the debate, and here on the East Coast, they go pretty late,
sure.
People do hear the clips played over and over again the next day and so forth.
That's exactly right. And I think that has as much a role in informing their view as maybe even watching the debate.
I would say that it actually has more of a role. If you look at the percentage of people that actually watch the debate, and certainly that watch the whole thing carefully from beginning to end, it's going to be fairly small. It's almost a matter of that's a, well, it's a matter of why they have these spin rooms that are labeled spin rooms or spin alley after theirs, after the debate, so that the supporters of the candidates can tell the press what it was that they just saw, because the press then will dutifully go off and report those comments to people the next day, and people will believe the press more than they will their own lying eyes.
Our phone number again is 1-800-892-6477. We want your thoughts, questions, comments about this presidential debate season that just wrapped up. The four events that many of us watched, three between the presidential candidates and one between the VP candidates. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And gentlemen, here's an email from Ellen, who says, "Why are we so focused on who won or lost the debate? Why can't we just use these forums as a way to better understand the views of the person who will forge the agenda that will directly touch our lives over the next 4 years?" Ellen says, "We've turned the election and the debates especially into a form of American Idol. Who seemed more energetic? Who scowled? Who laughed too much? Who seemed bored?" Eileen says, "Is this really the way we want to select the leader of our country for the next 4 years?" Wayne Lesperance, the American Idol comparison?
Yes.
May fit here.
Yeah, yes. I mean, that's the modern version of what in poli sci we often describe as the horse race, right? Who's up in the polls? Who's down in the polls? Who's scoring points here? Who's scoring points there? We do turn it into blood sport. We do turn it into, you know, this game. And boy, the poli sci professor in me wants a classroom full of Ellen's because, you know, her wanting substance is exactly what we want. But in reality, it's really about the people keeping score. One of the things I do on debate nights is I'm on Twitter, and I just sort of offer what I think is happening, but more fun is reading what others think is happening. And my goodness, if you want to see the just sort of spiral down to the least common denominator, follow people's tweets on that forum, because it's really about, you know, the color of his tie or the way he's standing or leaning. I mean, it's really micro processing every minute of that debate in a way that's, I don't know exactly what Ellen is talking about, I suppose.
Well, and Andy, to you, again from Ellen's email, if most people are already decided, does it kind of make sense that, you know, we're looking at other issues? If we already know who we're going to vote for, maybe we are looking at, you know, the scowl or the smile or the color of the tie.
Well, again, I think those are the kind of points that that Wayne was saying about on Twitter. They're used as attack points by supporters of the other candidates. That's what those are doing. On they're not saying that they like the color of his tie. They're making fun of the other
right.
guy's tie. But I think there is something to be said that we shouldn't overlook about some of these less substantive factors. We're human animals by and large, and we respond to the characteristics, the personality characteristics of people. Do they look like they're in charge? Do they look like you can trust them? Do they look empathetic? A lot of these things, they're going on, and our brain is processing this information while we can't even think about it. It's not conscious. And that, I don't think we can underestimate the importance of the appearance and the style and the feel you get from a candidate when you see them in these debates.
Well, and Andy, a lot of people do turn to you, you know, or pollsters like you, to see who America thinks won, who America thinks lost. I mean, is there anything wrong with that? Isn't winning important? People like their sports teams to win.
Well, politics certainly is a form of sport or a form of warfare. We want to see our guy win and the other guy lose. And it's, you know, complaining about that is complaining about human nature. You know, I think we always want to see a winner and a loser. And frankly, elections all about winning and losing. So it's not surprising that the downside is, and when you look at the polls, and I'll speak as a pollster, first off, people's initial response to this is really not what matters, as Wayne was talking about. There are instances in which polls immediately after debate will point to one candidate winning, but polls 3 or 4 days later after the spin has gone through show the other candidate winning. So it's the spin that's more important than the actual people that watch the debate.
Our number again is 1-800-892-6477. We're wrapping up the debate season and wondering if you watched most or all of these debates, your thoughts, what role you think these events, all four of them, played in our elections this year. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Ellen, thanks a lot for that email. Let's go to Bridget calling from Guilford. Hi, Bridget. You're on the Exchange.
Hi, thank you. Great show. I just wanted to take a minute, actually, and go back to the last debate as compared to the second and first debates. I was curious because I think that there were opportunities where, particularly with foreign policy, Obama could have been pointing out some of the faux pas that that Romney has already made during the campaign in foreign policy. And he didn't do that. Things like being at the Olympics with England and really some of the comments that Romney made about how the Olympics were run and, you know, really making some people there very angry, and he had to backpedal. I think in the second debate, he came out very strong against China, and there was some flack in China in the press, and he had to backpedal, I think, in this third debate. And I just think there were opportunities that could have been pointed out that weren't, and I'm curious why Obama didn't go more on the attack.
All right. Bridget, thanks a lot for calling in. And Wayne, your thoughts?
Boy, I think that most folks thought that Obama really was on the attack last night. And so I think Bridget did bring up some examples that weren't mentioned they could have been. But I'm thinking back to the president last night talking about Mitt Romney identifying Russia as the greatest threat to American security or something to that effect. So I thought the president was in attack mode last night, and I thought that he did a pretty good job. You know, after any debate, there's always stuff that's left on the table, and there's a lot of folks today talking about why Mitt Romney didn't press on the Libya issue last night. It was one of the first questions out of the gate, and he didn't really take that one up, whereas in the last debate, he really did try to go after the president. Didn't do very well with it, but he tried. And so there's always stuff left on the table after a debate, and maybe that's what Bridget's noticing.
And I think supporters of the candidates are always sitting at home saying, why don't you say this? Why don't you say that? Go after him at this. And it's frustrating for people who are watching the debates wishing that their candidate would really go on the attack. But, you know, one of the things we do have to remember, when these guys are on a big stage with millions of people watching, and they've been crammed, filled with facts and data and strategies and one-liners and so forth over the last 4 or 5 days, it's not surprising that they're going to miss opportunities. They have a kind of a focused list of things that they want to do. And we in America really don't train our politicians to really think on their feet in debating style like you might see in Parliament. So we're always hoping for something like Prime Minister's question time in these debates, but we never really get it.
Well, Bridget, thanks a lot for calling in. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. So stepping back, guys, and again, looking at this whole debate season, here's the standard narrative that you hear. President Obama had the momentum until that first debate in Colorado, and then he lost it. How, Wayne, do you think Obama's subsequent performances, which most people thought were improved in the following debates, how did that affect the momentum? We keep hearing about the momentum of this campaign.
Well, of course, we won't know for sure for a few days until folks like Andy get some more polls out in the field. I think the way to look at it is this. If you were counting just, you know, the three debates, I would say the president probably won two out of the three debates, right? The problem with that, though, is that the first debate is so much more important than the next two that there was a real big lead to overcome. And so on balance, I don't know that the president was able to completely blunt Romney's momentum, particularly in those swing states that really matter so much this election cycle. But that's something we're going to see lots of folks polling on and talking about in the next few days. And that's where folks should really pay attention. Ohio, Ohio, Ohio.
Wait, what about New Hampshire, New Hampshire?
I love New Hampshire. And you know, by the way, I want to be the first to say that the next debate will be in New Hampshire in 2015. So first in the nation once again. But Ohio is really the state that seems to be the one that's going to matter a whole lot this election.
Really? So they do matter then, Wayne.
The debates?
Yes.
Oh, yes. I think they do. I think they do because of the narrative afterwards, the spin afterwards, as Andy's been saying, and how people perceive the candidates to have done. The fact that the president went in with what folks thought was a pretty good lead in a lot of these swing states, and now that has been wiped away, and we're seeing national polls with Romney leading, is pretty significant. And I think you do attribute that to the debate, the momentum that comes out of that first debate in particular.
Yeah. Andy, what do you think? Go ahead.
Well, I think first we have to put these debates in the broader context of the election itself, and that is in the context of the economy. When the economy is bad, the president and the president's party typically get blamed. That doesn't mean that the voters are going to immediately run over to the challenging candidate, but they're certainly looking for somebody else to vote for. And what happens in these debates is when you have an incumbent president and a bad economy, is that the challenger has to show that they can assume the role of president. They have to be a legitimate They have to be able to pass the podium test to look like they could be president. And I think that we've seen in the last several elections in which the economy has been bad that debates have mattered. In 1980, the one debate between Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter showed the country that Ronald Reagan wasn't a crazy old man. He seemed reasonable, and Carter's support for Carter plummeted after that, and Reagan walked into a fairly handy victory. In 1992, Bill Clinton was this young guy that George H.W. Bush thought that there was really no reason for him to debate, that he couldn't possibly be seen as presidential, but he showed that he could stand up to President Bush at that debate, and he went on to win the presidency. This time around, it's still the context of the economy being there, and I think voters are going to judge whether Mitt Romney looks presidential enough to be seen as a legitimate president. And after the first debate, I think a lot of people in the country decided that he was.
I think Andy's exactly right. And I think one of the big telling points about this is if you look back at the whole Barack Obama campaign, it has been about defining Mitt Romney as an unacceptable choice, right? Not up to snuff, not ready for prime time, that kind of thing. And I think what voters saw on that first debate was he seemed pretty reasonable. He seemed pretty normal. He seemed like he could do the job. And that was all he had to do in the subsequent debates is appear to be presidential commander-in-chief. And I think, and to that extent, he was pretty successful.
More of your calls and emails after a short break, gentlemen. And also want to ask you a little bit about the role of the fact-checking organizations during this debate season. So a lot more coming up. Stay with us.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the New Hampshire Institute of Politics and Political Library at St. Anselm College, New Hampshire's home for politics, online at anselm.edu/NHIOP. And from Raff Young and Pignatelli, celebrating 25 years of innovative client-focused solutions for businesses and nonprofits throughout New England, rafflaw.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
I'm Virginia Prescott. Discovering new ideas often means asking the right question.
What was the question?
That's the best question you can pull out of that stack.
How can I help you?
Word of mouth. Unexpected radio for the inquiring mind. Monday through Thursday at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're assessing the debates, all three presidential contests, also looking at the vice presidential debate. Tomorrow, we'll check in on the North Country's economy. Join us with your thoughts now by calling 1-800-892-6477 or continue our conversation, post a comment on NHPR's Exchange page. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page or join us by phone, 1-800-892-6477. We want your reactions and thoughts to this year's debate season, what you thought about the debates, how useful you think they were in terms of both information and impressions of each candidate's temperament. And if you were an undecided voter going into these debates, did they help you decide? One more time, that number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, here's an email from Jennifer, who says, I watched all four debates and was extremely disappointed that neither candidates nor the moderators mentioned climate change. This is the first time since the 1988 debates that climate change wasn't mentioned, and the media is doing nothing to bring this issue to light. Jennifer, thanks a lot for that email, and I also want you to answer it, but also, Wayne, if you could talk about other issues that have not come up. She's right. Climate change has barely been mentioned, if at all.
I think that's true. I think that certainly would have fit in as a part of a foreign policy conversation, because there certainly are international implications. It could have fit in as part of a jobs conversation. I think there was 1 or 2 minutes spent on it in terms of cap and trade and that impact on the economy and jobs and job creation and all that in the second debate. But that's about it, and I think it's a fair observation. I thought last night there was a moment that was really clumsily handed when Mitt Romney said something to the effect that, you know, I love teachers, and, you know, and talking very briefly about education. That didn't seem to come in very well. Women in the first debate were completely missed. Women's issues were completely missed out on that first debate. And so I thought that was a bit of a mistake. And a little bit of it last night, clearly they're trying to talk to women as a demographic. But again, not in a very purposeful and meaningful way, I thought. So there are a handful of things that got missed. I'm sure there are others I'm not thinking of. Andy, maybe add something.
Yeah, and Andy, again, to Jennifer's point about climate change, I was struck that it did not come up in that second presidential debate when they did devoted a big chunk of time to energy policy. But instead of mentioning climate change, it was more, you know, who loves coal more and who's going to drill more.
Well, I think the reason we're not hearing much about those other issues is largely because the economy is bad. That's what people want to hear about. That's why Romney, I think, has had an advantage in these debates, because all he needs to do is keep steering the conversation back to economy and jobs. What President Obama needed to do, and I think he tried to do, was bring up some of the other issues, but I don't think he was as effective as he could have been, largely because both the moderator as well as the audiences are concerned about jobs.
And Andy, real quick to you again. Okay, so climate change hasn't come up. Jennifer, thanks for the email. I've also read that some are disappointed that immigration didn't come up, that housing didn't come up. Have you heard any of that, Andy?
I'm surprised that housing didn't come up too much, although you think about why would the candidates want to talk about these issues? Why would President Obama want to talk about housing issues? Frankly, he's not going to want to talk about that at all. He's going to hope that nobody mentions it.
Why is that, Andy?
Well, because the housing market still hasn't recovered to the point it was, four or five years ago, and that it's, I think, a point of potential weakness for Democrats if you get into some of the causes for the collapse of the housing market in the first place. He's going to want to talk about anything except economic issues. Now, largely to Wayne's point, he wants to try to make this a race between him and an unacceptable Mitt Romney, whereas Romney just needs to focus on jobs, 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 jobs. So both candidates have an advantage or have reasons for talking about issues that are not necessarily casting a broad net about all of the things that are important in the country.
And Wayne, before the debate season began, a lot of people were saying these candidates really need to influence or attract Latino voters, but immigration came up maybe once.
Yeah, and that's surprising. On the campaign trail in states where there are sizable Hispanic populations, the president talks about the DREAM Act, talks about issues that are important to those communities quite a bit. Not in the debates, and I don't have an answer for that. Why he didn't do that? I think Mitt Romney is particularly vulnerable with Hispanic voters on the issue. With comments like self deportation and on issues of immigration. So that's kind of a curious omission.
Let's go back to our calls, gentlemen. And Jed's waiting in Barnstead. Hi, Jed. You're on the air. Thanks for hanging on.
Oh, thank you so much. My question is sort of more of a comment. Kind of a frustration I felt with the general overall motif of all the debates so far. It's that both of them, President Obama and Governor Romney, weren't really so much answering questions. They were more using the words jobs, the economy, as sensationalism. There is no finite definition of exactly what they're saying. Perhaps that's my niche as a business major that's frustrating me. But there were points in the debates where neither of them were letting each other talk, and it seemed more a platform for, I want to say, petty bickering. There was a point last night where President Obama literally said something to the extent of, that's completely wrong. As a voter, I feel frustrated and insulted that neither of the candidates are actually coming up with finite answers, and it's more becoming a petty squabbling match.
Yeah, Jed, it is frustrating because sometimes you don't know who is telling the truth. I've got a question for both of you gentlemen, but first, Andy Smith, your thoughts on Jed's point. Jed, thanks a lot for calling.
What do you want, substance at a presidential debate? I don't think that happens very often. The candidates, they answer the question that they want to answer and get across the points that they want to get across. They don't really try to answer the specific question that the moderator asks, or do they want to veer off their fairly defined and tested stump speech about the issues that they think are important and the way to address them. So it's not surprising that you're not hearing much more than, you know, semi-platitudes on the debates.
Wayne?
You know, I think that's right. I mean, imagine a candidate said, you know, in response to the question, gee, you know, we really got that one wrong, and what a mistake that was. I mean, that kind of honesty isn't going to happen because it really is, you know, tested, poll tested, you know, focus group tested answers, even the way they phrase things, the way they practice their posture and their standing and how they do everything about, you know, these debates is so scripted. The amount of time they spent preparing for these. That last night there was a funny story that, you know, the moderator, Bob Schieffer, was wearing purple socks in support of his football team, the Texas Christian University. Purple socks. So in debate training for Mitt Romney, the person who was playing the role of the moderator wore purple socks just to make sure they got every possible wrinkle in a debate.
Come on,
out there.
Really?
Absolutely.
Down to the socks.
Down to the socks. So that's how scripted these things are.
Well, and to Jed's other point, I share your frustration, Jed. You know, it's so hard to decide who's telling the truth, what the truth is, when one person's saying that's wrong and the other person saying, no, it's not. What about the role, Wayne, of the fact checkers this debate season? Seems to me they've been as busy as ever.
Well, and I'm not really sure who gets the most out of those folks. I think we like knowing that there are those folks out there. And if you hear something that doesn't sound right, there's a fact checker that's going to confirm that or explain that to you. I think they can provide important context. But I'm just not sure how many folks are really paying attention to that, those fact checks. As much as the campaigns are, plucking the ones that they like and sort of dismissing the ones that they don't.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for that call, Jed. And let's go to Mark in Mount Vernon. Hi, Mark. You're on the air. Thanks for calling the Exchange.
Thank you for taking the call. In my opinion, I believe that Mitt Romney actually won the debate. And I think the strongest comment that he made during the debate was when he looked at the president and simply stated the government isn't the one that creates jobs. And I think that that is a point that has been proven with the stimulus packages. And I think that President Obama really looks like he is being taken to the woodshed every time the economy comes up. And it doesn't serve him well.
Did you watch all three presidential debates, Mark?
I did.
Yeah, and that's the impression that you got from all three of them.
Yes, is that he really is in a position where he cannot defend or show where his policies have actually improved anything in the economy.
Mark, thanks a lot for calling in. Andy Smith, what do you think?
Well, I think that really summarizes why Mitt Romney is focusing on the economy as much as he can. It's difficult when you're the incumbent president to defend a bad economy. And even if it's not your fault, you're the one who gets hung with that. And I think that's one of the reasons that Romney has done well and why he keeps trying to focus on the debate. It's also interesting to hear that people's perception of the debate seems to reflect their own personal preferences for the candidate. So I think that Mark seemed to be a Romney supporter, and he was listening for those comments about the economy, and those are the things that resonate with him.
And on the other side, we had Mary, our first caller, I believe that was her name, Wayne, who seemed like a strong Obama supporter. It does make me wonder, and I know we keep hitting on this point, but it does make me wonder how much, Wayne, these debates change anybody's minds, or is it just like Andy said earlier, you know, the supporters coming out to cheer their team?
There is a lot of that. And obviously a lot of what the president said last night with Mitt Romney, that line that Mark just mentioned, is clearly red meat for the base. I mean, part of this is early get out the vote efforts. This is about energizing your debate, about doing something about any enthusiasm gap that might be out there. I mean, if you remember to the left-leaning pundits after the first debate, they were apoplectic about what they had seen. I mean, Chris Matthews is screaming at people the whole night because
that.
He was just so overwhelmed by the lack of performance by the president. So you know, to the extent that, that's a bad performance, and a good performance is when you say the kinds of things that your supporters are going to get excited about, are going to say, yes, that's what we want to hear. That may lead to more turnout. That may lead to them getting their friends to turn out. I mean, that's kind of what a lot of this becomes about.
So we shouldn't criticize the debates when we say, well, they didn't change anybody's minds. It's not just about that.
No, no. I think there's a lot of levels to this. And one of them is just energizing those people that are your supporters.
Let's take another call. This is Jerry waiting in Nashua. Hi, Jerry. Thanks for joining us. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. My only comment is I think that having the debates televised detracts too much from the substance of what the candidates are saying. For example, there was a lot that was made of the candidates dancing around each other and confronting each other during the second debate. And I think, and I know there's probably no way to ever do it, but I think all of the debates should only be conducted on radio.
You won't get any argument here, Jerry, but go ahead.
Well, I figured I'd be preaching to the choir on
right.
that one. But if that were the case, people would concentrate more on what the candidates are saying rather than whether they're smiling or laughing or whatever.
Yeah. Jerry, thanks a lot for calling. Boy, this is really interesting. And Andy Smith, this is something we've been talking about since that famous 1960, I think it was, debate between Nixon and Kennedy, right?
Right. The supposed difference between people's watching the debates on TV versus listening to them on the radio. My problem with the debates is that they are media events. They really are an opportunity for the stars to be the media moderator and the spin the commentators after the debates. Frankly, a much more effective way would be to have a moderator whose only job is to be a timekeeper and have somebody turn off the candidate's microphone when they go past their time. So let each person speak for 5 minutes and turn off their mic, and that way we can maybe have a substantive debate on issues and positions rather than this kind of scripted posturing that we see with these debates.
Wow.
That really came through in the vice presidential debate. The amount of time spent on describing Joe Biden's smile and the eye roll and the kind of just, you know, affectation that, you know, was pretty stunning. But it's exactly what, you know, they know this going
in. That's what
in.
Jerry's talking about.
Right. They're mugging for the cameras. They know that there's going to be cameras on them, and they want to make sure they've got the right thoughtful look. Or, you know, in the case of the president, a lot of discussion about him looking down and seeming dismissive or that he didn't even want to be there. I mean, somehow you got that out of his body language. Andy's right. I'm all for Lincoln-Douglas debates. You know, let's just throw the question out there and let them go. But that's not our tradition in the United States, and I don't know that how many presidential candidates would be up for that sort of thing.
Well, if you ask the question and then just let them go, as you said, Wayne, they won't answer the question. Speaking as someone who's moderated a fair
then the voters,
of debates.
Then it's up to us to hold them accountable, right? I mean, that's the other problem is do we hold them accountable for not being responsive?
Interesting. Well, Jerry, thanks a lot for the call. It's a terrific point. And final thoughts from you, Wayne L'Esperance, on where the campaigns use all this fodder from the debates as they move into the final 2 weeks.
I think Andy made the point earlier that they're going to go through these debates and start pulling little clips. You're already seeing some of that. And those clips are going to find their ways in a very targeted way into the markets where they will have the most impact.
For example?
Those Navy voters, those Navy families, those Navy contractors in southeastern Virginia, North Carolina, Florida are going to see a lot about horses and bayonets from the president's comments. We're going to see that sort of thing. We're going to see, you know, the president linking or talking very tough about being supportive of Israel in communities where there is a significant Jewish vote that the president is courting. Those kinds of things. It'll be very micro-targeted, very specific, but I think a ton of effort and time, and we'll see their calendars as they roll out, will be spent in Ohio and places like that, and particularly going after those voters.
Wow. Andy?
I agree with what Wayne said. I think that you're going to see two kinds of things pulled out of the debates. One is the kind of comments that Wayne was talking about to try to convince some of those swing voters that the other candidate is unacceptable. The second thing are going to be the comments that are pulled out to really rally your base. I think this is going to be a base election. I think that the reason that the battleground states are battleground states is they're evenly divided between Republicans and Democrats, and the country as a whole is pretty evenly divided between Republican and Democratic voters. And I think that's going to be the major push now is to make sure that your folks show up at the polls and that these debates were designed to energize bases more than to persuade swing voters.
Which is the point you made earlier, Wayne.
Right.
You know, I have to ask one last question for you, Andy, and it may seem like a silly one, but here it is. The baseball playoffs. a lot of people, including, you know, the men in my household, are pretty engaged in this. I mean, do these really play a role in terms of how much people pay attention to the debates? Would they be watching the debates if they weren't watching the baseball playoffs?
Well, some people might say they'd be watching anything rather than the debates. They're just looking for something else on the other channel. There's an old rule of thumb in politics is that the election, you know, starts either after Labor Day or it starts when the World Series is over, and that's when people will actually start to pay attention. And what we're talking about there is not the people for whom politics is a really important part of their life, but for the regular voters who don't care about politics that much, who are much more interested in their job and their kids and the World Series than they are in the election. And for them, deciding who to vote for is not that big of a deal. It's not that hard to do, but they're not going to bother to think about it until it's time to really have to think about it. And that's going to be when the World Series is over.
That and last night was Monday Night Football, and it was the Bears and the Lions. I mean, it was a very interesting matchup that had relations to politics. The funniest thing that happened last night, I thought, was at a moment when I was following Twitter, Chuck Todd from MSNBC was offering scoring updates while he was at the debate site. So it's clear that reporters are also paying attention to a lot of different things.
Darn it, why'd I have to be covering this debate when I could be watching?
I think that might have been it, right?
Well, guys, thanks a lot for being with us. I really appreciate it. I know we'll be talking to you more in the 2 weeks that remain. Andy Smith, thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks a lot.
Andy Smith, director of the UNH Survey Center and an associate professor of political science at UNH. Wayne, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Laura. My pleasure.
Wayne Lesperance, professor of political science at New England College and director of its Center for Civic Engagement. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Samantha Johnson. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.